Good evening. It's good to be with you once again. I welcome you with all my heart. Never take life seriously. There is nothing in this world that should be taken seriously. I know you've been told that you have to be serious if you want to get anywhere. But where do you want to get? There's no place to go. There's really nothing to get. You are already perfect, bright and shining, pure. All you have to do is to awaken to your real nature. Then you will realize yourself completely, totally, that there's nowhere to go and there's nothing to get. And instead of wasting your time taking life seriously, do your utmost to awaken, to wake up. Do not pay any attention to your aches, to your pains, to your mental anguish, to the world situation. These things come and go. Since the beginning of time, we have had all kinds of people on this planet going through all kinds of experiences. Man's inhumanity to man has always been here. Wars, earthquakes, cataclysms, they have always been with us since the beginning of time. And it's funny to me that people are trying to straighten things out. You can't straighten anything out. You may appear to straighten something out for a while, but it will return again just the way it was. This is why I always tell you that all is well, and everything is unfolding as it should. You may not be able to see this right now. Some of you may believe you've got financial problems, you've got mental anguish about something, you have physical problems. The point is, you must turn away from these things. Turn completely away and focus on the I Am, the real self, the absolute reality. And you will laugh every day. You will be happier than any happiness this world can give you. Most of you right now are searching for ultimate happiness. You think that when you get married, you'll be happy. When you get divorced, you'll be happy. When you get a degree in school, you'll be happy. When you have a great job, you'll be happy. Why doesn't it work that way? This is not always the case. You know, people or yourself will have strived for a certain position in life. We work very hard to attain a certain position in life, to be in a certain place where we can be successful, rich, famous, whatever. Then when you get there, that's not what you expected. And you're disappointed. Or some calamity may take place. Something may happen to the job or to the family. Nothing in this world is certain. Therefore, do not take this world seriously. Be the witness to your condition, to the world condition, and then discover who the witness is. Life is interesting. I was taking a walk in the park this morning. It was such a beautiful day. I sat down on the bench and closed my eyes. Then I felt the presence of someone else who sat down near me. And I felt that this person was going to tell me all his troubles. And sure enough, he did. He started talking to me out of the blue, telling me about his rheumatoid arthritis, that his bones are getting real stiff, his fingers are getting gnarled, he's in real bad shape. I never looked at him, I kept my eyes closed. I asked him, "What are you doing about this?" So he said, "Years ago I went to a doctor, they gave me all kinds of drugs, made things worse. But what I'm really upset about is I'm a Christian Scientist and I'm not supposed to get sick. I know Christian Science backwards and frontwards. I know all the rules and regulations. Why did this happen to me?" I inquired, "What have you been practicing as far as Christian Science is concerned to help you with the problem?" So he remarked, "I've been knowing the truth that disease does not exist and God is all there is. God is the first principle, the first cause, and disease cannot possibly exist." So I waited a moment or two and then I asked him, "If you say disease does not exist, how come you're renouncing it? How can you say disease does not exist and then all of a sudden believe that you're healed, when just by voicing disease does not exist means that you believe in disease? Otherwise, how can you utter the word? Where would disease come from? Where would the word come from? There's something in your subconscious that knows disease. But you would not proclaim disease does not exist. Do you hear what I'm trying to say? The word disease in itself can only be known by a person who feels disease. If you didn't know about disease, there would be no such word. There would be no word like health or disease. Disease is the opposite of health. If you believe you're healthy, then you also believe in disease. Do you understand what I'm saying? And he said, "A little, but not too much." I explained it again. You keep affirming that disease does not exist. How can you affirm that? Only if you realize that disease is an entity. It's a power. It's real. Would you be able to say it doesn't exist? There has to be somebody to experience it so they can say it doesn't exist. If you were healthy all the time, you would never be speaking about health or disease. But because you've got rheumatoid arthritis, you're trying to heal yourself by saying disease does not exist. What you're really doing is causing the condition to get worse. And then I asked them, what do you mean by God is all in all? What is God? And he answered, why, God is the supreme power, the creation of heaven and earth. This is God. So I further explained, now we're dealing with three entities. We're dealing with a disease that does not exist. We're dealing with your body that seems to have a disease. And we're dealing with God, who is all in all. We really have a battle on our hands if we're dealing with all of these things. When you go to sleep and you are in deep sleep, do you feel rheumatoid arthritis anymore? And you exclaim, no, I don't. When you dream, do you feel your disease? You say, no, I don't. I feel the dream. It is only when you're awake, so to speak, that you feel this, don't you? And he said, yes. So I further continued. I said, why don't you begin with yourself? Forget about God. Forget about the disease. Those are unknowable right now. Begin with yourself. Ask yourself the question, who has the disease when I awake? I do not seem to have them in deep sleep or when I dream. It is only when I'm awake that I seem to have these symptoms. So I asked him, who has it? He said, I do. And I explained, that's just the point. You don't have it, I does. What you call I has a problem. Do you not explain this to yourself when you say, I have this disease? So he asked me, doesn't I mean the body? And I said, not necessarily. The body in itself is a lump of flesh and bones and blood. How can it have a disease? When the body is sleeping, when the body is dreaming, when the body is dead, it does not have any disease. It has nothing. It is only when you think of I is the personal self. It is I who has this problem. Not you, but I. Not you, but I. Where does the I come from? You have to inquire within yourself, I explained. It begins and ends with you. You have to ask yourself, where does the I who seems to have this disease come from? What is its source? He said, I don't know. I answered, you're not supposed to know. Don't worry about knowing or not knowing. Forget about who knows or doesn't know. Simply ask the question to yourself. Where does the eye who appears to have a disease come from? And keep still. He said, well, if I keep still, I won't have the answer. I said, that's just the point. Every answer is wrong. As long as you come up with an answer, it's not the right answer. For you're dealing with infinity. You're dealing with the absolute reality that knows absolutely nothing about disease or the eye or the body or the mind. I kept still. Then I felt the lightness. And I opened one eye and it was gone. Probably couldn't take the heat. Now let's talk about you. Think of all the so-called problems you think you have. It makes no difference what they are. You identify with them. You always want to correct them. Set things right. You always want to do something to alleviate the suffering, the pain. People have tried this since the beginning of time. No one has ever succeeded. It's hard to tell you to leave the world alone and leave your body alone and leave your affairs alone. This sounds sort of selfish. For in your way of thinking, you say, if I leave these things alone, who will do them? How will they get done? You always believe that the I thought, the personal self, has to do something, has to react to situations, become angry, become frustrated, feel out of place, out of sorts. Yeah, this is not the truth. You did not ask to come to this earth, to be born in a body, yet here you sit. There is something that knows how to do everything for you. There is something that knows how to take care of you. I have to give you eternal happiness and peace and love. This can only happen when you get yourself out of the way. You get yourself out of the way by not worrying, by not fretting, by not being afraid, by not comparing, by leaving everything alone. Leaving everything alone. Not by arguing or debating or trying to prove a point, but by leaving everything alone. You might ask, if I see a person in need, shouldn't I help them? Yes, you should. Something will make you help them if that's what you're meant to do. You will know what to do spontaneously. You will do the right things. But if you think about it, then you will not necessarily do the right thing. Because when you think, it is your ego that thinks. Your ego is not your friend. Your ego wants to keep you human, keep you grounded, keep you in duality, keep you striving and struggling. When you begin to ignore your ego, it will go away. And it's interesting that most psychologists, psychiatrists will ask, how can you survive without an ego? They ask this because they never had an experience of a non-ego. They only share with you what they've learned in books and school. They share with you what people have told them. There's hardly a psychiatrist or a psychologist or anybody else who's had an experience of a non-ego. So they try to shape your life so you will fit in society. Who wants to fit into society? You want to awaken to reality, not fit into society. You have been given an opportunity in this life by having a so-called body with which to work in order to awaken from the mortal dream. Yet you use this opportunity for other purposes. You use it to attain name and fame, as if that's going to do anything for you in the long run. You use it to develop powers. You're wasting your effort. Karmically, you have been given this body to transcend, to transmute. To let go. To surrender. Yet you spend all of your time doing the opposite. You waste your time by reacting to everything that comes your way. I tell you these things again and again, that you keep doing it again and again. Think of the last time that you reacted to person, place, and thing. Try to understand what's happening if you're not awakened. If you believe you're not awakened and not free and liberated, when you react to person, place, and thing, you come under the law of karma, which appears to exist. I know there are many people in Advaita Vedanta who tell me, well, you know, Robert, karma doesn't exist. Only the self exists. Only effortless pure awareness exists. So why are you telling us about karma? In truth, you have to look at yourself and ask yourself, have I experienced pure awareness? Have I experienced absolute reality? I can't afford to put on an act. It will only go against me. You have to speak to yourself this way. Therefore, I know that if I'm still reacting with my body, I still believe I am the doer, do not fool yourself. Be truthful with yourself. Therefore, if I'm still reacting, if I still believe I am the body, then there are other bodies in this world that respond to me. And there's karma, there's reincarnation. All these things exist for me only because I believe I am a body. I therefore have to be careful what I do with myself. So whenever you react to a condition, you are setting the so-called law of karma, which doesn't really exist. You're setting yourself up. It's as if you step on a rake and the handle hits you in the face. That's immediate karma. Therefore, if you tell me karma doesn't exist, I tell you, step on the rake and the handle hits you in the head, that's karma. That's called boomerang karma. It came back to you immediately. Yet there are all kinds of karma. That's why people appear to get away with things. That's why we can't understand why a good person must die early and a so-called evil person seems to live and prosper sometimes. We do not see the whole picture. We see a partial picture. For our life is here partially. We're here today and we're gone tomorrow. It's therefore impossible to know the whole picture. So say, for instance, you find yourself mangled by a car that hits you. And you've been such a good person. You've given to the poor. You helped the homeless. And now this car has hit you and you're all mangled. You can't use your legs or your arms any longer. You're blind in one eye. You're a total wreck. If you were able to see the whole picture, you would see that in the previous existence, you belong to a savage tribe. And it was your duty to torture prisoners when they were captured. And now karma is paying you back. That's all karma is, a payback. So while we're on the path to liberation, we have to be very careful what we do with our lives. Every little thing is karmic. It is only when you awaken, when you are liberated, that none of this exists. This is why I tell you so often, do not fool yourself. Look at how many times a day you become angry. You feel cheated, you feel exploited. You feel something is wrong someplace. You feel depressed. You go and do something to cause this condition to stop. And whatever you do, you're accruing karma. There's only one way to overcome this. And that is to forget about the world, forget about your body, forget about situations, and go deep within yourself, inquiring, to whom does this come? Who's experiencing karma? Do not feel sorry for yourself if you're ill, or something not going right in your life. Do not compare yourself with others. Remember, you're only seeing a partial picture. You're not seeing the whole picture at all. It's like the example I give when you look through a keyhole. You see somebody choking somebody else through the keyhole. And you're saying, why is he doing this to this person? He's a no good murderer. But then you open the door and you're able to see the past and the future. You see in a past life the person's getting choked, used to work for the state on the gallows, and used to hang people, some innocent people. And you go back to the middle picture, now somebody's choking him in this life. And you go back to a future picture, now they're both laughing. Nobody was choked, and nobody choked. This is what life is all about. It's a cosmic joke. Karma seems to be real, and you're affected with it all day long. Whatever you do, wherever you go, you're always affected by karma. It is karma that moves your body. It is karma that makes you do things. It is karma that causes situations to come into your life. Do not try to change the condition. Do not attempt to change the situation. For you may appear to change it, but this is only an appearance. It will come back again in full force. There's only one way to get rid of it, and that's to transcend it. By forgiveness, mercy, and love. And as you practice forgiveness, mercy, and love, you inquire to whom all this is coming to. Who is experiencing these things? Who's going through all these things? And again, you will discover the I thought, I am. I I'm going through all of these things. I appear to be going through karma. I appear to be suffering. I appear to want to get even with someone. You begin to realize it's not you, it is the I, which is only a thought. Just knowing this alone makes you feel good. For you begin to see that you are free. You are bright and shining. You are Satchitananda, Nirvana, ultimate oneness. It is the I that appears to have the problems. You separate yourself from the I by self-inquiry. And then you can go further by inquiring, where did the I come from? You never answer that question. By inquiring, that is sufficient. And you will find that you're in the silence. The void. Just by going this far, you will feel better than you felt in years. You will feel such joy and such peace. This has nothing to do with enlightenment, but you're going to feel joy and peace more so than you ever felt before. Just by inquiring, where does the I come from? The reason you attain such joy and peace is you begin to see that you're not the I. You have absolutely nothing to do with the problems of the I. It is the I that feels anger. It is the I that feels pain. It is the I that feels rejection. But you ask yourself, what have I got to do with the I? I have absolutely nothing to do with the I. Therefore, again, you ask, then where did the I come from? Who gave it birth? What is its source? And you keep quiet. A feeling of total love will overpower you. For you're learning to sit in the silence. That's the most important point. You want to get to the place where thoughts do not bother you, where things do not annoy you, where there are no problems and there are no solutions, where there's no good and there's no bad. You want to get beyond duality. And rest in the silence. Many of you are getting a glimpse of what I'm talking about right now. As you rest in the silence. You're not thinking about it. You're not trying to analyze it. You're not trying to make it happen. You're just resting in the sounds. Perfectly still. All of a sudden, thoughts come up again. You start over again. You begin again. You inquire, to whom do these thoughts come? Who is thinking these thoughts? I am? If I is thinking these thoughts, then it has absolutely nothing to do with me. It appears to me that everything is attached to the I. All of the emotions, the fears, the frustrations, it's all attached to the I. Again, you say, where did the I come from? What is the source of I? Who gave it birth? You never attempt to answer. You sit in the sounds. Some of you are beginning to feel how good it is to sit in the silence right now. The mind is completely empty. The fears are gone. There is nothing left to tell you anything. You are quiet, still. Thoughts pop up again. It makes no difference if they're good thoughts, bad thoughts, or in between. The whole idea is to empty the mind of all thoughts. You inquire again. Who's thinking these thoughts? I am. Who am I? What is the source of I? Who gave it birth? Where does I come from? It's giving me all this trouble. And it keeps thinking and thinking and bringing up to me all sorts of morbid thoughts, all sorts of happy thoughts, all sorts of thoughts. Where does this I come from? What is its source? And again, you enter the silence, where everything is totally still. where there's no movement. The vasanas have disappeared. There's just perfect stillness. You're beginning to discover something very interesting. You're beginning to discover that you're able to sit in the silence for longer and longer periods without thought. It's taking longer and longer before a thought comes to you. Yet you're not falling asleep. You're feeling a peace that you never felt before. You're beginning to feel an all-encompassing love. You begin to experience that the whole universe is an emanation of your own mind. And what you have done is you have pulled the entire universe into your heart. Everything, all of the galaxies, the Milky Ways, the planets, the Earth, with all of its manifestations. Everything has vanished. That's total silence. When you're sitting in the silence and the world is so available to you, that is not silence. That's a false silence. The true silence is when the whole world, the whole universe, people, places, and things have all disappeared. You will pull them back into the heart center. That is the true silence. For there's no longer anything to think about. Everything is gone. There is just a void. The beautiful, precious void. And you're beginning to sit in that void, in the silence, for longer and longer periods. When you come out of it, the world appears to you again, but it's different. It begins to be different for you. You no longer look at the world in the same way. You no longer see the universe in the same way. You begin to feel everything as an image. You see images on the screen of life. The images keeps changing. But the screen is always the same. And something begins to tell you that you are that screen. You have always been the screen. Unchanging. Absolute pure reality. But you're not free yet. this comes and you goes. Little by little, the thoughts come back again. You begin to feel anger again, but less than you did before. You begin to have less interest in your body. The things about your body that used to bother you stop bothering you, stop annoying you. People no longer make you angry or frustrated. This happens little by little. And you can't wait to practice again. When you are by yourself and you're not disturbed, you sit down in your favorite chair and you begin to inquire, to whom do these thoughts come? Why they come to me? I still feel thoughts. Maybe less than I did before, but I still feel things. You further inquire, who is the I that feels these things? Where did the I come from? Who gave birth to this feeling I? What is its source? And now you begin to feel that the I is only a thought. It is one of the thoughts that you've been thinking about all these years, called the I thought. Yet everything is attached to it. And you keep seeing it and thinking about it. But now you're inquiring, to whom did it come? Who's feeling it? Where is its source? And you go back into the silence. Now every time you get into the silence, you feel better and better. You feel lighter and lighter. The world again, the universe, again is sucked into your heart. The whole universe is gone. All existence has disappeared, including yourself. There is nothing but the silence. Shanti, peace. Feel free to ask any questions.
possibly a kind of fear that we have that we're holding on to, perhaps that we're not even aware of, that can be holding us back, because obviously it's the ego doesn't want it. And we're here because we want it as we are, but the ego obviously doesn't. And is there something there that perhaps we're not seeing that can be blocking us? Because of this fear of, you know, completely being destroyed in terms of an ego?
Whenever there's a thought, and you have to ask, from whom does it come? Who feels this? To whom does this come? Who believes in a blockage? Who thinks there's a blockage? It is the ego that does this. That makes you feel that there's a blockage. Or there's something interfering. Follow it through. Ask to whom does it come, who's feeling this, I am, who am I? And it'll disappear. You'll feel freedom. Whatever comes into your head, whatever thought, good or bad or in between, always inquire to whom does it come. As long as it's a thought, and follow it through. Then as you sit in the silence more and more, everything will break up. And you'll feel the blockages less and less. And you'll become a total blockhead.
Try to leave the world alone. Like when you encounter a problem, just even they ignore it. But we also have to face and try to solve our problem.
Who does?
Well, either the body or every day we do, if we work, we also have to solve the problem.
Who does?
If we don't do that, if we don't solve the problem, the body and the eyes, whoever you say it is ego.
Who tells you the problems will not be solved? Why do you believe that if you do not think about it, the problems will not be solved? It is your ego right now that believes this. You have been brought up and trained to believe that unless I solve the problem, it will not be solved.
Well, it's not that if I solve the problem, well, maybe it's not existing the way somebody will look at it, or, you know, the other person will look at different ways.
And forget about the other person.
Right, well, sometimes you will say that's your problem. You will hear that sentence, it's your problem. Or, you know, it's my problem, though, it's not your business, so on and so forth.
Well, who hears this? Who goes through all of this? All this is human thought.
Yeah.
It all has to do with your ego and your mind. Go beyond that. Do not rest at that level. Go totally, completely beyond the mind.
Yeah, but then just sit still and do nothing?
You will sit still and do nothing for a while. But something will pick you up and make you do the things that you have to do. And you will find that they have done better than you ever done yourself. Everything will be done. So you're sitting there and you're worrying that nothing will be done. And you're sitting still. but you will sit still for a while, and when you get up, you will go about your business without even thinking of it, and your business will be done, and everything will take care of itself. The whole idea is to stop believing that you have to do it. Stop believing that you are the doer. Surrender everything. Let go of everything. And see what happens. In other words, when your mind tells you, I have business to take care of, and if I don't take care of it, nobody will take care of it, and you will fall down. Then ask yourself, who said so? Who says this?
So in other words, if I doesn't do that, you will say that somebody else will take care of it, or it will take care of itself?
You will take care of it. That's what I mean when I say it will take care of itself. You will do it. But yet you are still not the doer.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And I identify with, as the doer, have to do something. Because the body or the mind tell me I have to do something, however that is.
The body, the mind, and the I are all the same.
Right.
Therefore, when you transcend the body, the mind, and the I, the self, the absolute reality, will take care of everything through your body. Yet you will realize that you are not the doer and you are not the body. But there will be an appearance of doing the work and doing it better than you've ever done it before. You will appear to be doing it. But you will know that nothing is happening. There's no one doing anything.
So in other words, we just imagine that it's the problem. When we encounter a problem, we think it's a problem, and you say that it's in reality it's no problem. We look at it as a problem.
You see it as a problem. Your ego sees it as a problem.
Right.
Yeah, the problem does not exist except for the ego. So when the ego is transcended, there's no problem. Yet, you will still appear to be doing the work.
I've had an experience around this time. When I fold a towel, I fold it much more quickly, and much neater than ever I did in the past, without really thinking about it.
Mm.
That's more or less what you're talking about.
That's a good point, exactly. It's like when you're walking on the curb and you cross the street. You do it automatically, you don't think about it. You've done it for so many years that you cross the street, you go on the curb, you step off the curb. Your body is doing it. Yet you're not conscious of it. You do it automatically.
So you're talking about spontaneity, aren't you?
Yes.
Just doing things in the now without worrying about the immediate past or the immediate future or even the result, but just
now. Yes. Now you will do what you have to do. Everything that has to be done now will be done. Yet you will realize that you're not the doer, you're not the person doing anything. And you'll be in total happiness and total peace.
So Robert, when this happens, will we have ceased at that point to have any kind of interior life whatsoever?
Any kind of interior life?
Mm-hmm. As we know it now.
You mean when you awaken?
Mm-hmm.
When you awaken, there's no one left to have any kind of interior life at all.
God's zombie.
Yes.
It's not so bad as no exterior life either, is it?
Same thing. There's no exterior life, there's no interior life. There's nobody left to have that.
That's
human endeavor. Even though you try and you make a mistake and then you learn from the mistake, if you keep it up in the human way, something else will happen. There's always something happening to a human being. This works, this doesn't work, you learn from this, then you have a new trial to learn from, then you have to do something else and learn from that. It never stops. It goes on and on. What we want to do is to transcend it. Get rid of the whole ball of wax. Let go of everything completely. Stop playing the game.
But then you won't call that as a mistake. It just...
You wouldn't call anything. There'll be nobody left to call anything anything. You'll be free of calling it. Only when you're a human being with an ego do you call a spade a spade. Why do you call a spade a spade? If you want to call a spade, go on. But when you're completely empty and there's nobody home, there's nobody left, then there's nothing to do. But you will be doing everything that has to be done.
Then why did we have to go through all those experiences in different ways?
Who does?
We all do.
Speak for yourself. You're seeing all these experiences, and you believe you have to go through everything in different ways. But it is your ego that believes this, not you. It is the mind that believes this, not you. You are not your mind, you are not your ego, you are total freedom. But as long as you're thinking with your mind and with your ego, then it appears that you go through different experiences in different ways.
Yeah, but until I experience that I am nobody,
All is well.
Robert, did we say that fear wakes up the ego?
You're a schmuck, that
bigot. What was your question?
You said, are you a schmuck?
Tell me.
Would you say that fear is what wakes up the ego?
Fear doesn't wake up anything. What wakes up the ego is to inquire, where did it come from? Who has the fear?
I'm saying that a person goes through life kind of unconsciously, unafraid, relaxed, and everything's happening as it should. And all of a sudden they run into something, and I'm asking, and is it possible they feel a little worry and fear, and then they say, oh, I got to do it. I got to take charge now to make sure this goes right.
You're still playing the human game.
I'm saying, is that when they're entering the human game, is when they become fearful?
It's part of the human game when you become fearful. When you become fearful...
And I'm saying, without fear, are they living in the self?
No.
No? You sure?
The self is total freedom. The self is total freedom, and there's nothing about fear.
Yeah.
And there's nothing about games.
I have a hunch we're not understanding each other.
What are you saying?
I'm saying that if a person is living without fear, aren't they maybe resting in their self, but as soon as they run into a situation where they get a little fearful and start worrying, and something in them says, oh, I got to take charge and make sure this works out right, then they enter into the ego?
Oh, yes, that's true. Right.
So fear is kind of like the red flag that, oh, here comes the ego.
You can say that. But why say it?
Because I like to... because my ego likes to understand.
Ask yourself, who likes to understand? Where does the ego come from? Why do I want to know all these things? Make your life very simple. Don't get into mind games. Simply empty yourself out totally, completely. Become totally empty of all the words, of all the deeds, of all the thoughts. When you're totally empty, everything will take care of itself.
You mentioned something earlier about a way of awakening. I think that's what you said, a possible way of awakening, if there is a way, was to forgiving and compassion and love. Now, if I'm in a state of anger, or my ego's been hurt, or whatever, so, or old wounds that I've been hanging on to all my life, should I just ignore that feeling, or recognize that feeling, ask who this feeling is coming to, and then just override it and go?
You can't ignore it. If you ignore it, you'll supplement it, and it'll always be there. You have to face it head on by inquiring, to whom did it come? Whose feeling is, where did it come from?
So where does the forgiveness and the compassion come?
As you keep practicing this, forgiveness and compassion come by itself. As you practice self-inquiry, you become more compassionate, you become very forgiving, you have mercy on yourself.
Maybe what he's thinking about is, you said, I think you used the word, you practice compassion, mercy, and love. Is it?
Yes, you practice compassion, mercy, and love as you practice self-inquiry.
But then aren't you also saying that it's really kind of a spontaneous thing that begins to happen as you practice self-inquiry?
It happens as you practice, yeah.
You can't do it by the numbers like you can self-inquiry. You can't say, now I'm going to do a love thing and I follow this little procedure.
Not really, but you can think about these things. You can think about being compassionate, being loving.
But you can't necessarily force it.
You don't force it, just think about it. You practice self-inquiry as you think about these things. You become a living embodiment of compassion, love, and forgiveness.
Hopefully.
Sure. Mm.
Well, what seems to happen is, like, the ego gets less hurt. It doesn't get, it's not so sensitive, it's not there
yes.
as much.
As the ego becomes weaker and weaker, mm-hmm. and it begins to disappear, it hurts less and less. What used to hurt it before does not hurt it anymore, that way.
For a Jnani who has realized the identity of his inner being with the infinite Brahman, there is no rebirth, no migration, not even liberation, for he is already liberated. He is firmly established in an experience of the absolute existence, knowledge, bliss, the Satchitananda Atman. The continued existence of the world and of his own body appears to the Jnani only as an illusion, the appearance of which he cannot remove, which cannot further deceive him, till the time when, after the decease of the body, he wanders not forth, but remains where he is and what he is, and eternally was, the first principle of all beings and things, the original, eternal, pure, free Brahman. While living, and even when the body falls dead, the Jnani rests in his own essential nature, his own Svarupa that is all full, all pure, timeless, consciousness and bliss. The following assertions made by a Jnani constitute his own deepest convictions and experience. I am infinite, imperishable, self-luminous, self-existent. I am beginningless, endless, decayless, birthless, deathless. Never was I born. I am ever free, perfect, independent. I alone am. I pervade the entire universe. I am all permeating and interpenetrating. I am supreme peace and freedom absolute. A Jnani lives forever. He has attained life everlasting. Cravings torture him not. Sins stain him not. Birth and death touch him not. He is free from all cravings and longings. He ever rests in his own Satchitananda Svarupa. He sees the one infinite self in all, and all in the infinite self, which is his being. He remains forever as the infinite self of consciousness and delight.
Thank you, Mary.
Thank you.
We have any announcements?
No. We finally got transcript 53 out.
We have prasad. Thanks to Tony Leitner, we have this prasad, which is delicious. It's very powerful.
Sugar. Good sugar.
So eat it gently. Do not force it. Chew it 50 times.
And then spit it out.
And we have also almond cookies, twin dragon, no animal fat, no tropical oil. Sounds good. Eat, drink, and be merry.
Don't you push them?
Go ahead and give him one. He can take it.
I can't refuse him.
Take a man who's permanently older, don't you?
Right.
No sugar, no preservatives. This makes up for that.
Non-cookie.
Oh. Thank you for coming.